be a big man here,
the Gossam said, emerging.
But this little kingdom of yours is a dust mote in the boss's eye.
Orin stepped out and put his hands on his hips. Well, you can tell your boss or anyone who wants to know. This oasis is for good people. We don't want you around. He cast a sideways glance to the dining area, where he saw the wide-eyed customers listening intently. He pointed to the exit. Now go and take your muscle with you. Bupa beckoned to his fat companions.
Let's go, boys. This place stinks.
He looked around, his snout crumpling.
You've had Tuscans here.
The trio filed out of the building. Orin followed and stood in the doorway, yelling out after them. And keep that blasted music off as you go! Annalene stepped to the window, watching in amazement. Bupa was back in his ludicrous vehicle, pulling away, quietly. She looked back to Orin. What was that all about? Orin turned back to face the occupants of the store. It's nothing, he said, straightening. Some gangsters hoping to shake down honest folk for protection money. An old story. He pointed a thumb out the window. But it turns out that the settlers call us multiple uses. Once they heard how fast we'd gotten an army here to fight the Tuscans, they lost interest. The statement was delivered as modestly as any she could recall coming from Orin's mouth, and it sent a wave of excitement through his audience. Several customers approached, eager to talk to him about joining the call fund. Annalene looked at Ben. The man seemed as confused by the experience as she was. Annalene turned to sweep up the remains of the Gamorrean's dining, but Orin stepped free from the crowd and tugged at her sleeve. Oh, Annie, we need to talk about your land speeder. Annalene did a double take. It wasn't the subject she'd expected was on his mind now, not with new business at hand. There's a delay, Orin said, sounding earnest. Glomer said so, but you don't have to worry, he said. Releasing her sleeve, he took her hand. I'm going to get something sorted out. In the meantime, you can use the USV-5. Your land speeder? The offer startled Annalene. Orin's luxury vehicle was the pride of his existence. She suspected the only reason he let his son behind the controls was to make it look as if Orin rated a driver. I don't mind, Orin said, bringing his other hand atop hers. He clasped them tightly and looked directly at her. After all, you're almost family. Annalene's eyes widened. At the mention of her land speeder repair, she had expected Orin's usual excuse with a smile routine. But this was different. He looked serious. A meaningful expression for others, but Orin looked that way so infrequently, she had no index to measure his sincerity against. Family, he said again, loudly enough so those around could hear. Annalene was aware of eyes watching from around the room. Part of her wanted to ask where this was coming from. Instead, she could only stammer, thanks. She withdrew her hand and stepped back. Orin turned his head and saw Ben lingering in the next aisle. Oh, Kenobi, he said dryly. Were you ready to talk business about the fund? Ben shrugged. I'm sorry, I may have been wasting your time. Orin looked back coolly. No law against it. He looked over at the mess on the floor. You know, Ben, stuff keeps happening when you're here. I hate that we keep inconveniencing you. Yes, I should be about my business, Ben said mildly. He bowed and turned away. Orin walked back toward his office, the exultant customers following. Annalene goggled. Did Orin just tell one of my friends to leave? Suddenly indignant, she stomped after Orin, intending to ask exactly that. If it had been a dismissal, it was the lightest, politest she'd ever heard. but no one but she had the right to tell anyone in her store what to do. Just as she reached the back of the crowd, however, something told her to look back. Ben was gone. A breathless Callie met her just outside the door to the livery.
"Did Ben leave?"
she asked anxiously.
"Rue's gone."
"Yep." Sighing, Annalene looked back into the store. "And he never got the water keg we owe him."
"Bizarre. Where do you think he's from, Mom?"
"I don't know. But wherever it is, they sure don't understand the concept of shopping." Meditation. Enough. Just 3 visits and chaos. I shouldn't have gone. I'm endangering the mission. I won't go back there again. And needless to say, I'll be doing these chats mentally from now on. I expect you understand why.
Part 3. The Bright Center. Chapter 25.
Sand people live with sores every day. At birth, every Tuscan infant was swaddled tightly in bandages. The nurses worked so fast, Ayak had never seen her children's faces. Channeled through little mouthpieces, her son's cries had been tinny and agonized. Babies had no way of appreciating the curse that existence represented, nor did they appreciate the shame of exposed flesh. But they quickly became acquainted with the price the coverings exacted on the body. Numberless in a lifetime, sores simply had to be endured. Kishik had been slow to learn that years earlier. The human abductee had thought her rapid